Welcome to the Deep Dive. I am your host, and I'm honestly so excited to jump into this today.
And I am thrilled to be here as your expert guide. We definitely have a lot of ground to cover.
We really do. So our mission today is to explore over 20 research papers on Zenodo. We are specifically focusing on organizational schema theory, or OST,
Right.
and we're looking at how this framework is fundamentally rewriting the rules of business expansion, branding, and, well, operations in general.
It really is. It's completely changing the landscape.
Yeah. So to kick things off, I want you to think about this. A McDonald's franchise costs $2.2 million upfront, plus 8% of revenue forever. What you are actually buying is someone else's organizational template. There is now a way to get the quality specification for free forks like open source software and write your own template.
I mean, it is just a complete paradigm
Well,
shift.
absolutely.
We are talking about decoupling the knowledge of, how to run a successful business from those incredibly restrictive, rent-seeking licensing models that have, well, basically dominated the last century of commerce.
Yeah, which sounds a bit utopian, honestly. I mean, decoupling a century-old business model isn't just going to happen overnight.
No, definitely not.
But to understand how it's even possible, we need to look at our roadmap. Three things today. What a franchise actually sells when you strip away the branding. How the open specification alternative works, share the quality contracts, keep the organizational decisions, and why an independent operator who forks the spec actually emits stronger brand signals than the franchise location down the street.
That last part is especially mind-blowing.
It really is. Okay, let's unpack this.
So let's start by looking at the sheer scale of the landscape we are dealing with here.
Right.
The U.S. franchise industry generates over $827 billion annually.
Wow.
Yeah, it is an astronomical amount of capital changing hands every single year. But, if we strip away the famous logos, the golden arches, the recognizable sub sandwich signs,
Sure.
we have to ask what that massive $2.2 million fee actually buys you.
Which is something I've always wondered about, because
Yeah.
millions of dollars is a really hefty price tag just for like the right to use a specific color scheme and a logo on a paper cup.
Exactly. And it breaks down into four primary pillars.
Okay.
First, you are buying operational knowledge.
Yeah.
So the highly guarded recipes, the exact procedures, the daily checklists.
Right, the how-to guy.
Second is brand recognition, which we will get to a bit later.
Yeah.
Third is supply chain access, meaning you get those pre-negotiated relationships with approved corporate suppliers.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And fourth is ongoing support. That typically takes the form of corporate audits and training manuals.
Got it.
But fundamentally, at its core, the franchise fee is a knowledge access fee.
A knowledge access fee.
Yes. You are paying a premium for information that someone else already figured out through, trial and error.
I see. So it's essentially like buying an incredibly expensive recipe book that you are legally forbidden from editing.
That is a perfect way to put it.
But okay, let me play the skeptic for a second here.
Sure, go ahead.
Isn't strict consistency the entire point of a franchise? I mean, if you let people edit the manual, doesn't the whole system just, devolve into chaos?
Well, that is the traditional corporate defense, yes.
Right.
They argue that rigidity equals quality. But the papers we're looking at point out that this exact model creates three massive structural flaws that actually hurt the business over time.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is the innovation problem. So imagine a franchisee in Ohio who invents a faster, more efficient cleaning protocol,
Okay.
something that saves, say, an hour of labor every single night.
That sounds great.
It does, but they cannot use it.
Wait, really? Why not?
Because it deviates from the mandated process specification. In a franchise environment, deviation is treated as a compliance violation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the franchisor owns all the intellectual property, so there is literally zero incentive for the local operator to innovate.
That is incredibly counterintuitive. I mean, you're actively penalized for being smarter or finding a better way to do things.
Precisely. And that leads to the second flaw, which is the information asymmetry problem.
Information asymmetry.
Right. The franchisor sitting at corporate headquarters knows the overall system design, but the franchisee working the register knows the actual local conditions.
Oh, yeah, they're on the ground.
Exactly. And neither can fully verify the other's claims, which leads directly to the third issue, the evolution problem.
Okay, how does that play out?
Well, when local conditions change, let's say there's a new local labor regulation, or maybe a sudden municipal water disruption,
Right, something out of their control.
the franchisee has to wait for corporate to authorize, a deviation from the manual. So the entire system optimizes for rigid consistency at the expense of necessary adaptability.
Okay, yeah, I'm tracking with you. So the traditional franchise model locks operators into this expensive straitjacket.
Yes.
They are paying a huge portion of their revenue just to be told they aren't allowed to adapt.
Exactly.
So if that's the reality, there must be a way to decouple the actual quality of the product from the suffocating bureaucracy of the organization.
Yes. Nice. And the solution actually comes straight from the world of software engineering.
Yes. This was the part of the research that completely blew my mind.
It's fascinating.
It introduces this concept of the Git clone business model.
Mm-hmm.
We are literally talking about forking a physical business.
We are.
The researchers used a demonstration called Spectra Coffee. It is an entire, fully functional specialty coffee operation, and it is entirely specified in 25 YAML files.
What's fascinating here is how organizational schema theory applies test-driven development to physical, real-world business operations.
Right, which is a software engineering concept.
Exactly. It strictly separates what must be achieved from how to achieve it.
Wait, before we dive deeper into that, what exactly is a YAML file?
Oh, right.
For the non-coders listening, are we talking about an Excel spreadsheet, or is this like hardcore programming that requires a computer science degree?
No, it is much simpler than that. Think of a YAML file as just a highly structured, plain text checklist.
Okay, a checklist.
Yeah, it's incredibly easy for a human to read, but also perfectly formatted for a computer to understand. It's just a way of organizing data cleanly.
Got it.
In software, you use these files to write tests that define expected behavior, and then you write the implementation to satisfy those tests. If the tests pass, the code is considered good.
Okay, but how does testing software code translate to something tangible, like, you know, pulling a shot of espresso or baking a croissant?
It works through what OST calls the cascade model.
The cascade model.
Right. It uses abstraction levels, usually numbered L0 to L5. The L just stands for level. So the creator of the specification shares the test suite. These are the L0 to L2 quality contracts.
So what does a quality contract look like in real life?
Well, for example, an L2 quality contract might strictly dictate that an espresso extraction must take exactly 25 to 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And the water temperature must be precisely 92 to 94 degrees Celsius.
Right.
That is the required outcome. That is the what. Then the independent operator who cloned the business defines the implementation, the how, which are the L3 to L5 procedures.
Okay, let me make sure I'm translating this correctly.
Sure.
This means one operator could decide to use a beautifully crafted manual La Marzocco machine with a hand lever.
Right.
While another operator across town could use a fully automated Eversys push button system.
Exactly.
And as long as the water is exactly 93 degrees and the shot takes exactly 27 seconds, the system doesn't care what machine they use.
You've got it.
Yeah.
Compliance means passing the tests, not following the manual. Those are different things. Yeah. An operator who passes every single quality test but uses a completely different staff scheduling system or a different espresso machine or, you know, buys their napkins from a different local supplier. They are perfectly compliant.
Because the organizational decisions belong entirely to them.
Exactly.
And the economics of this are just staggering. I mean, let's look at the math again. McDonald's demands a $2.2 million initial investment plus an 8% royalty on your gross revenue forever.
Right.
Meanwhile, an org schema fork costs exactly $0 in licensing fees because the repository is public. You literally just clone the code from the internet.
Which raises an important question about what you're actually buying in a franchise. We call this org as metadata unbundling.
Org as metadata unbundling.
Yeah.
Okay.
A traditional franchise bundles two totally different things together. First, the process specification, which is how to make the product.
Right.
And second, the organizational metadata, which is who owns the LLC, the specific corporate hierarchy, the mandatory supplier contracts.
So they bundle the process and the organization into one incredibly expensive package.
Exactly. But org schema unbundles them. You fork the public process contracts for free, but you write your own organizational metadata.
One of the papers summarized this perfectly. A franchise fee is two fees bundled together. You only need one of them.
Precisely. The process specification becomes a machine-readable public good. The organization is yours to build.
Okay, I am completely sold on the economics. If I am opening my first cafe, paying $0 for a proven operational model is an absolute no-brainer.
Absolutely.
But let me play the skeptic again.
Always a good idea.
Most independent cafes fail when they try to scale. If I'm letting my staff choose their own espresso machines and their own suppliers, as long as they quote unquote pass a test, doesn't opening a second location turn into complete chaos?
That is known as the expansion trap, and it is the exact hurdle that breaks most successful independent businesses.
It's just such a relatable scenario. You open a cafe, it's a massive hit, you've got lines around the block. So naturally, you take out a loan and open a second location across town. But within 6 months, the vibe at the new place is just off.
Yeah.
The coffee tastes slightly different, the service is a little more chaotic, and the online reviews start tanking. Why does that happen so consistently?
Well, it happens because the real challenge of expansion is not copying the menu. It is copying the coordination intelligence.
Coordination intelligence.
Right. That successful first location ran on unwritten rules, what researchers call tacit knowledge.
Okay, like what?
Like the head barista having a gut intuition about adjusting the grind setting based on the morning humidity.
Right.
Or the opening manager having a very specific, totally undocumented way of arranging the pastry case that made it look abundant and welcoming.
Yeah.
The team just knew when to clear tables during a rush because they had developed muscle memory together.
Right. So the first location succeeds because of that muscle memory and tribal knowledge, but the second location fails because it's essentially running on an incomplete manual. The new team only gets what was explicitly written down in the PDF training guide, which is maybe like 20% of what actually made the first place great.
Exactly. But here is how Org Schema fixes this. It forces that tacit knowledge into explicit knowledge through the testing gates.
Wait, how do you write a software test for a barista's unwritten intuition about morning humidity? You can't code a vibe check.
Well, you don't try to code the intuition. You write a strict test for the final output.
Oh, I see.
Instead of a manual saying adjust the grind if it feels humid, which often fails, the L2 test strictly measures the output.
Mm-hmm.
Extraction must take 27 seconds.
Ah.
The test forces the local barista to figure out the local humidity adjustment in order to pass the gate. The test doesn't capture the intuition. It enforces the outcome, forcing the local operator to adapt.
That makes a lot of sense.
The sources outline a perfect example with a Second Spectre coffee location in Friedrichshain, Berlin. It is a direct fork of the original specification.
Yes, this was a brilliant case study.
It really was.
The Friedrichshain location shares the exact same L0 to L2 quality contracts as the original Spectra coffee, but it features exactly 6 parameter overrides at the sourcing and procedure levels.
Right.
So because they are in a different neighborhood, they use a different local bakery for their pastries. They use a completely different water filtration system because the municipal water supply in Berlin has a different mineral content.
Exactly.
And they have a different morning alarm sequence. But despite all those changes, they still pass the exact same 47 quality gate tests.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the second location becomes what is called an organizational metamer.
An organizational metamer.
Yeah. In biology and chemistry, metamers are things that look or behave completely differently internally, but produce the exact same perceived output to an observer.
Oh, that's a cool concept.
Right. So the second cafe looks different inside. It runs differently internally. It buys from different local suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
But it successfully produces the exact same value output and passes the exact same tests as the first location. It is an organizational metamer.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
What about the brand? I have to ask this because people don't just pay millions for the McDonald's Golden Arches for the recipe book.
Very true.
They pay for the perception cloud it generates in the customer's mind. A global brand signifies safety, predictability, familiarity. If I'm a customer, doesn't an independent fork just look like a generic, risky knockoff?
Well, that assumes that the corporate franchise brand signal is the only valuable brand signal out there.
Is it not?
Not at all. Spectral brand theory, which maps how observers actually perceive and categorize brands, proves otherwise.
I love how this theory visualizes it. I want you, the listener, to picture this exact visual in your mind.
It's a great thought experiment.
Think of a video game character creation screen, where you have those web-like radar charts mapping out stats like strength, speed, and magic. Brands have that exact same chart in our brains.
Right.
Now, imagine two adjacent coffee shops on the same street. On the left, you have a franchise location. It has uniform signage, a standardized layout, a bright corporate color scheme. It is clean and highly recognizable.
Very standard.
And on the right, you have an independent cafe that forked the exact same quality specification. It has a different name, a completely different interior, local artwork on the walls.
Yeah.
But behind the counter, it's using the exact same beans, passing the exact same barista training contracts, hitting the exact same extraction times.
Now, picture that radar chart below each of those coffee shops, measuring their spectral profiles across different dimensions of perception.
The franchise on the left is completely maxed out on the semiotic dimension, meaning visual consistency, the logo is everywhere,
right,
and the economic dimension, signaling massive corporate scale and predictable pricing. But the independent shop on the right is maxed out on entirely different stats. Yeah. It scores high on the temporal dimension, meaning it feels rooted in history. It scores high on the ideological dimension, meaning it feels organic and values-driven. And it scores high on the cultural dimension, reflecting the local community. It is the exact same coffee in the cup, but these are radically different brand positions. You can't max out all the stats at once.
And that is the crucial twist of this entire theory.
Yeah.
The independent cafe emits perception signals that no franchise location ever can. To a specific observer cohort, people who deeply value community, authenticity, and supporting local business, that independent shop reads as local, owner-operated, and rooted in a specific place.
Right.
A corporate franchise structurally cannot emit a genuine local and rooted signal. This is not a bug in the fork model. This is a massive feature.
That makes total sense.
It is exactly why independent shops survive right next door to corporate giants. They occupy completely different positions in observer spectral space.
So basically, the independent operator who forks the spec emits stronger brand signals on the dimensions that matter most to their specific cohort. They are intentionally trading the corporate recognition of the franchise for the cultural and ideological resonance of a local institution. And because they use the open specification, their coffee is just as flawlessly consistent as the giant corporation next door.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean for you? Whether you are an entrepreneur looking to start a business, a manager trying to scale operations, or just a consumer wondering why you prefer the indie shop over the chain.
Right.
The question isn't really whether to be a franchise or an independent. The question is what you actually need from a franchise model.
That's the core issue.
If all you need is the operational knowledge, the know-how to make the business run perfectly, the fork model gives you a continuous CI/CD validation pipeline.
Which is huge.
And for those outside of software, CI/CD just means continuous integration and continuous deployment. It's a system of automatic, rigorous checks that ensure every update improves the system without breaking anything. And you get all of that validation for zero licensing costs.
It separates the valuable operational knowledge from the rent-seeking behavior of corporate licensing. Your organizational template is yours to write. The quality specification is the public good.
If you want to go deeper on how AI changes the organizational coordination layer specifically, episode EOST1 covers operations for businesses moving into the AI era. If the brand signals question interests you, why different organizational forms emit different perception profiles. Episode 8 is about how AI dissolves the organizational layer entirely.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. Today, we talk heavily about coffee shops and fast food.
True.
But if operational knowledge is rapidly becoming a free, machine-readable public good via large language models, what happens when it isn't just cafes being forked?
Oh, wow.
Imagine citizens forking the organizational schema of a highly efficient public school or an entire municipal government.
That is wild to think about.
Imagine a community rewriting the organizational metadata to perfectly fit their specific neighborhood while keeping the core quality contracts, the educational standards, and the operational excellence entirely intact. If the code of how we organize ourselves is open, who really owns the future of human coordination?
We started by talking about a $2.2 million manual. Now that manual is free and the entire world is forkable. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time.